My guest at this time is Grace Marie Turner. She is the president of the Galen Institute, just outside Washington, D.C. It's one of the most well-respected healthcare policy organizations in the country. Grace Marie has been a guest of ours many times talking about Obamacare, and the repeal and replacement of Obamacare became one of the most talked about priorities of Donald Trump in the final days of the campaign, and it still seems to be there as he is now president-elect. And Grace Marie, thanks very much for being with us.
Always a pleasure, Greg. Thank you.
Well, Donald Trump told the Wall Street Journal a couple days after becoming the president-elect that he might keep a couple of things that are in existence when it comes to Obamacare, and out of respect for the president, interesting phraseology there. Most people believe that means he wants to keep allowing children up to the age of 26 on their parents' policies and to not allow pre-existing conditions to deny someone coverage. So I've heard a lot of other Republicans say that those need to stay due to how popular they are. Can those stay without breaking the bank?
They can. And first of all, I mean, the White House should have, or the president-elect should have come out early on saying, of course there are some goals in Obamacare that we share. We want to make sure that as many people as possible have coverage. We want to make sure that people are protected so that their insurance is real insurance. The fact that they're in Obamacare does not mean that they're bad. And I think that's really what's happened, is if it's in Obamacare, it's bad, and that's not true. And I think increasingly the Republican Congress is already getting a head start in making sure that when they repeal Obamacare, there is a transition so that people will be able to keep the coverage they have now. They do not want to be the ones who cause millions more people to lose the coverage they have now or to face even higher premiums. So they have to do this very, very carefully. But the fact that these provisions were in Obamacare doesn't mean they're bad. They just have to go away about achieving those goals in a different, much more consumer-friendly and market-friendly way.
Let's talk about a couple other things, namely mandates. Individual mandate, employer mandate. Do they have to go?
They do have to go. The individual mandate in particular is the single most unpopular part of this law. And when you look in detail at the Supreme Court decision where this was challenged, and the Supreme Court issued its decision in June of 2012, 9-0, the court said that the individual mandate is itself unconstitutional. There is no provision in the Commerce Clause that allows the federal government to force American citizens to buy a private product. But they did then wiggle through that, and by a slim majority, 5-4, say that yes, of course, you can say that people have to purchase health insurance or pay a tax. Give them a choice. But it is absolutely unpopular, and there are ways, actually, I think, through the regulatory process, not even through legislation, that Mr. Trump could basically eviscerate the individual mandate, but I also expect that to be very much on the chopping block when they do their repeal bill. And the employer mandate is the same. Even many of the president's advisors said that the employer mandate is really relatively useless except for forcing people to buy health insurance that is, that is extraordinarily expensive and driving up everybody's premiums and deductibles.
Let's talk subsidies now. Do those continue, or will increased competition, whether it's allowing companies to compete across state lines and other factors, bring down prices to the point where those will either be minimal or unnecessary?
Well, I think we would be all happy if we could get health insurance prices just back to the levels that they were before Obamacare passed. The White House keeps saying, oh, they've only gone up 3-4%. Tell that to anybody who has written a check for health insurance premiums, whether it's an employer or an individual buying in the individual market. Health insurance costs are absolutely going up, and we need to figure out how we're going to be able to get those back in check. I don't think that you're going to ever get them low enough for people with the lower middle income categories who do not have the option of employer-based health insurance to be able to afford coverage. That was the whole target audience before Obamacare. They're the people that are likely to lose their coverage when they do repeal, and they're going to need to continue to get subsidies. People with employer-based health insurance get huge subsidies worth $250 to $300 billion a year in forgiving that part of their income from taxes that goes to pay their health insurance premiums. So people who don't have that option are shut out of that. They're paying their premiums with after-tax dollars. So, yes, I think subsidies are going to have to be part of the equation. They're going to probably very likely be some sort of a bridge so that people who have coverage now through Obamacare don't lose it. But then we begin the process of setting up a system that gives the states more authority to define what health insurance is, gives people more choices. The problem is that we're all now forced into the same straitjacket of Obamacare. We all have to buy these hugely expensive products, which fewer and fewer people can afford. Give the market an opportunity to really provide products that people want to purchase within parameters and some guidelines that basically make sure that it's real insurance and that people are protected.
So more competition, perhaps plans that involve fewer things being covered, catastrophic plans for young, healthy people, for example, that's going to drive down costs to the point where they were, you think?
They would, as long as they don't have so many rules that are driving, forcing young people to pay so much more than their likely use of health insurance, which is one of the problems with Obamacare. And so long as you don't have rules that allow people to simply purchase health insurance when they're sick and drop it after they get their treatment, that's not going to work. That's not real insurance. So it's not only that, but it's the rules that the insurance companies have to play by and that the American people have to play by in order to be able to make this health insurance both affordable and, importantly, to give the market an incentive to provide better options. I can't even think of the ideas that are out there that insurance companies might come up with and smart actuaries to give people the opportunity to make the decision for themselves what kind of coverage do they need. And, yes, maybe it's a health savings account, maybe it's a high deductible plan, maybe it's an HMO, but that has more restrictions on it. If people can make those own decisions for them, those decisions for themselves, then the market will be able to respond to them rather than all these Washington bureaucrats and regulators.
We're talking with Grace Marie Turner, president of the Galen Institute. Grace Marie, on the math side of things, we've talked so many times about one of the big problems with Obamacare is that they expected a lot of young, healthy people to pay a lot of money for health insurance, so that could help to offset the costs for people who are unhealthy, who are getting insurance, and the cost that they are building up. If we take away the mandates, the argument's going to be from the left that you're going to create even bigger problems on the ledger. So how do you not lose more money by taking away the mandate?
Well, you really have to provide incentive for people to want health insurance. It's not that you're forcing them to buy something they don't want. They want health insurance, but they don't want to pay more for their health insurance than they're paying for their mortgage, which is what's happening to many people right now. But giving people more options of more affordable coverage, and I really strongly believe that devolving the regulatory power back to the states with some new parameters, some high-risk pools, so the very sick people who just basically are not insurable still can get coverage, but they're not in the pool driving up the cost for everybody else. Right now, the problem with the Obamacare pools, insurance pools, is that increasingly everybody in them is sick, and the higher the premiums go, the more you have the very sickest people there. What you need is a mix of healthy people and people who, are unfortunately have the need to use a healthcare system, but they're spreading and sharing the cost. But they're not going to do it, as we've seen from young people's lack of participation in the Obamacare exchanges, they're not going to do it if their costs are simply too high. So we've got to focus on getting costs down, and that means giving people more choices, giving the marketplace the opportunity to provide more affordable options. And people are going to say, well, why didn't they do this before? One of the things that I think we're facing now is people are more informed. They know what they want. They know that all these benefit mandates cost them more money. Some states had 50 or 60 benefit mandates on their policies. People are smarter now. They're saying, we get it. That costs more money. If it's our money, we want to make sure those dollars go further. We have real protection. But we don't buy so many things that we really don't need.
I don't know if you'll want this term being used, Grace Marie, but is it almost like supply-side healthcare here, whereas when it comes to taxes, there's the idea that if you lower taxes, people will invest more, grow more, and you'll actually end up with more revenue, and therefore if you allow people more options at lower cost, more people will actually decide to get health insurance, and you'll actually have more money to work with?
I think that's really right. I think you'll find that the market is able to produce better products. And there were companies that went out of business as soon as this law passed. One was called InHealth out of Richmond, Virginia, that had come up with a very interesting, attractive model, affordable coverage, very, very popular, but it did not fit within the Obamacare mold. And the investors pulled their money, and that company just evaporated. But there are hundreds, maybe even thousands, of potential InHealths out there that would emerge if they knew that there could actually be customers for their products, because they're selling their products to customers not having to jump through so many bureaucratic and regulatory hoops. We've learned that this top-down centralized management does not work. People want to make their own choices. They want more choices in the marketplace. And in many cases right now with Obamacare, they have a choice of one, which is not much of a choice. And in some places, they're threatened with having no choices, no insurers participating. We must bring the supply. We must bring the supply back so that more insurers are wanting to participate in this and really wanting to cater to customers and not to government regulators.
Last question for you, Grace Marie. You've been following this debate. You know the key players in Washington. Who in Congress do you want to see leading this fight?
Oh, well, Congressman Speaker Paul Ryan has really already stepped up to the plate in directing the key committee chairman in the House to spend basically the first 6 months of the year in developing a comprehensive replace plan. And I've seen some news reports today saying, oh, Republicans don't have any ideas. I would recommend that they look at Speaker Ryan's Better Way plan, a very comprehensive white paper that describes what they would do, that is, as we speak, being turned into actual legislation. But yes, they do have a plan. I'm not sure, though, that they will introduce it as one gargantuan package. I don't think the American people have a stomach for that, but I do think they'll break it up into individual sort of bite-sized pieces so that we can do Medicaid reform, so we can do insurance regulation reform, so we can provide subsidies for people who need them in purchasing health insurance, and be able to do this in a careful, thoughtful, and I hope bipartisan way. That, to me, is very like the plan, and I think Speaker Ryan will be very much at the forefront of that effort. I've also heard that Congressman Tom Price, who's the chairman of the House Budget Committee, is being considered for HHS Secretary. He's a physician, former orthopedic surgeon from Atlanta, a very, very good and articulate person on policy. I think he'd be a great Secretary of HHS.
He's been a guest of ours many times, and I can understand why he's under serious consideration.
Have him on right now and have him talk about this.
We'll try, but I'm guessing it might be a little bit harder to reach at this point. Grace Marie, always great to have you. Thanks for helping us understand it better, as always. Have a great day.
Thanks so much, Greg.
Grace Marie Turner, president of the Galen Institute. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.